Welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. This podcast is brought to you in association with Game Refinery. Join us as we uncover the latest trends in mobile game design.
Hello and welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. This is the podcast that provides insights into what makes a great mobile game, what is and isn't working for mobile game designers, and all the latest trends. I'm your host, John Jordan, and joining me this week is Laurie Heikkinen from Game Refinery, your head of product, ad intelligence, and metadata, which is sounds very, very clever. How's it going, Laurie?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks a lot. It's good to be back. It's my second podcast, and again, talking about ad stuff from a little bit different angle this time, so... Good to be here.
Yes, it's going to be a good one. And joining us as our guest this week is Nate Barker, who is Director of Business Development at Calibri Games, based out of Berlin, recently acquired by Ubisoft. So lots of cool things going on there. How's it going, Nate?
It's going great. Thanks for having me on this week. We are pretty excited. There's a lot of fun stuff that's going on at Calibri that we're happy to talk about. And happy to join you guys to discuss everything.
Cool. So yes, as Laurie suggested, this podcast is going to focus particularly on ad monetization. But before we get there, let's have a bit of time for Nate to tell us what's going on with Calibri. As you say, you've really started the year pretty well. But can you give us a bit of kind of potted history into what you guys do and the sort of games you make?
Yeah, absolutely. So Calibri was founded about 4 years ago in Karlsruhe. Which is a little college town in southwestern Germany. It was founded by a few students in a student apartment that I have actually slept on when I was first getting hired, which my CEO has advised me to tell everyone was not a mandatory part of the hiring process. It was totally voluntary. So we did start off there, a little team with a game called Idle Miner Tycoon. Idle Miner Tycoon is an idle game where the principle behind it is that you are mining. And as with any idle game, it's a game that you cannot lose. You can only adjust the acceleration of your gameplay experience. Either you're mining more or you are mining a bit slower. So we continued focusing on Idle Miner Tycoon. We eventually added another game to our portfolio, which was Idle Factory Tycoon, and also moved to Berlin from Karlsruhe. Mm-hmm. We are now at around 120 people, all from around the world, which is really exciting. Obviously, I'm from the States, so I moved out here. We have folks from everywhere. And we've also started expanding a little bit. We opened up a studio in Bucharest. That is focused on sort of like the traditional idle miner tycoon type games. So there's a bunch of different type of idle games I could kind of go on about. There's clicker games, there's kind of merge games, which are in the idle sphere. Idle Miner Tycoon, I think, is maybe generation one or two. We want to continue to make those since those are very popular, but we also decided to branch out into more 3D games or 2.5D games, games that have a little bit more realism to them. So we started working on those titles as well. So we have Idle Pirate Tycoon and an Idle Farm Tycoon and an Idle Restaurant Tycoon. So we're perhaps picking up on a trend of our naming schema and genre and a few more titles in the pipeline. Along the way, we were also acquired about this time last year by Ubisoft, which has been pretty cool. We've had the opportunity to work on some crossovers. So we just finished a Just Dance mine in Idle Miner Tycoon. We have a bunch of more stuff planned, which we're really excited about. And I should also add that we are actively hiring. So if you are... interested in making idle games with us. We want to be the number one player-driven idle games company in the world. We spend a lot of time focusing on our players, listening to their feedback, implementing that directly into our product pipeline. So if you are somebody who's doing marketing, HR, game design, product management, art, analysis, or if you are an engineer, of course, we would love to have you come join the team. So just check out our website.
Good, good history. It does just show the velocity of the mobile games sector that a few students can set up something in their bedroom 4 years ago, and now they've got over 100 people being bought by Ubisoft and are setting up a second studio.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy how much it's grown, and I think, you know, I would emphasize that we really stand on the shoulders of giants and those who have come before us. So you know, we look up to you know, developers like Hyperhippo, who did with Kongregate, Adventure Capitalist, Game Hive, who did Tap Titans 1 and 2. Those were like really foundational idle games for us, that we were really grateful that that we're around and have been really awesome about sharing their experiences with us as we were growing. And then things, yeah, definitely sort of took off about 2 years ago, or maybe about 3 years ago, when we started growing. And I don't know, like, I'm sure you've had some other folks on who could maybe speak a little bit more to the frothiness of the game industry right now when it comes to acquisitions and other fun, exciting stuff. But it's been pretty wild.
Okay, so let's kind of talk a little bit about kind of specifically about ad monetization. Laurie, do you want to kind of give us a sort of a definition of what we think of as ad monetization? Like, I mean, I guess probably most people on the listening to the podcast probably know what it is, but you know, some people won't, and you have some insight into that. So so how does ad monetization work? What is it for mobile games?
Well, ad monetization is basically the other monetization method in adjunct with the IAP monetization, where people buy some products. With ad monetization, you watch ads. Either they are forced on you, or then you are incentivized to watch them. And usually you get something a little extra in the game. And I suppose when it comes to idle games, it's mostly about incentivized ads. Whereas in hyper-casual games, for example, there are a lot of forced interstitials. There could be some banners. And especially when looking at kind of top-grossing games, which have been monetizing with the IAPs more traditionally, they being also more or less bringing some ad monetization there. And then it's a lot about the implementation. How do you make it so that it's good for the user? It doesn't kind of do bad for the actual gaming experience, and how does it add something to the IAPs as well. Hmm. So there's a lot of things to consider there from the user experience perspective, as well as from the game economy and so forth.
Hmm. It's a good point, because as with kind of in-app purchase economies, there's obviously a wide range of how you can implement that, from very light to incredibly deep. And I think you know, we've seen certainly over the last kind of 5 years, I suppose, that the same thing has happened with ad monetization, which still, I guess, you know, because there are such bad examples of ad monetization, that people still there's a certain group of people who you know, think any game with an ad in is not a proper game, because there's some sort of advert in there. But I guess with mobile, and particularly I guess with stuff like the sort of games that Calibri are making, which are, you know, an idle type of game which only really exists on mobile. You know, they're not games. They may be games you do spend like hours a day playing, but you don't spend hours consistently, you know, in a block of time playing them. And actually, you know, ads really actually fit in quite well to the sort of gameplay. And actually, what you find, or what I've kind of found, is well implemented kind of ad strategy, particularly with as you say, incentivized ads, where you watch an ad and get some gems or get a speed up or something. Actually, what you find is users actually really love those and want more of them rather than less of them, which I guess shows how far the kind of industry has progressed in a few years. Nate, you talk about being a player-centric kind of company. So, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm sure some people even who play your games don't like ads so much. But in general, how do you find the attitude to ads?
Yeah, it's definitely a balance. And the way that we try to focus as a player-driven games company is to make sure that all of the ads are always delivering value. So I think, you know, advertising in general on mobile, there's a lot of like advantages and disadvantages, especially when it comes to monetization, right? So like the very, very early days, they were definitely all was all banners. And it was all kind of like offer walls and things like that. And that's essentially the only type of monetization you could do. And then we went in through a deeper arc that included things like interstitials, sort of interstitial video, before we landed in rewarded video. And I think rewarded video is a really good pairing for idle games, as you were just mentioning. The primary reason is that in an idle game, the way to think about it is that there's sort of two levers that you can manipulate, right? There is money and time. And that's really all there is. There's no accuracy. You know, you're not getting better at really like tactics or strategy, or you're not getting better at just like memorizing keyboard commands, you know, if you're playing some real-time strategies or things like that. Really, it's just money and time, because you can't lose. So we make sure that any ad we're doing is directly impacting one of those two things for the better. So for instance, ads have to speed up the time it takes to build a new upgrade, or they need to decrease the costs. That's a money one. Or they need to increase the payouts. That's another money one. So the focus for us is to really make sure that those two levers are always what's being, manipulated, and that it's always optional, so never really feels like a grind, and that they happen at really like natural breaks. So it's when players are about to leave the game, or when they're actually entering the game before they get into the mindset. So we're not like a platformer where you would expect to see an ad every time you die. No, that doesn't really make sense in an idle game where there's death. So it has to be at parts where it feels like it's normal for the player to, you know, take a break, or to, before they get into the game, to engage with an ad.
Yeah, it's very good. The having the optionality of allowing people to do something or not do something really stops a lot of the negative side of things and actually reinforces the positive side. I don't know if you can say this, being a privately owned company, what sort of percentage of your revenue do you get from ads? Is that something you can say?
I've done one or two interviews in the past, so I can say in my past interviews before we were public company. That we typically cited the figure around 50% of revenue coming from ads, and I would say that that is still a fairly accurate number about how much of our revenue comes from ads.
Kind of more generally, it is an interesting thing that when people talk about how big the mobile games industry is, you get these kind of figures floated around $70 billion, I think was the last one I saw. Often that is pretty much all in-app purchase, so the fact that, you know, billions of dollars could be generating through ads is not put into that figure, and the reason is it's obviously very difficult to kind of work that out. But it does seem to be that even it's obviously for the public companies, you can see that generally, you know, kind of 10 to 15% of a lot of even these big companies like Zynga and Glu, ads are not as much as you guys, because you have a particular sort of genre of game that you're playing. But even in these other big companies, you know, it's a fairly substantial amount. And really, you can only sustain that if the audience enjoys it and is participating in the ads. You know, the quickest way, I guess, to kill a product is to start putting ads that you can't skip into them.
We're sitting at sort of like a really interesting middle ground or keystone position. In the bridge between maybe the hyper casual and the hardcore games, like we're sort of like this kind of funnel, because hyper casual games spend a lot of time just advertising to themselves because they have to keep players churning back and forth between these experiences, and so we can acquire a lot of players from these hyper casual games that then basically get funneled into the more hardcore games where they're actually monetized with IAP. But unlike the hyper-casual games, we can still monetize a lot of these players with in-app purchases. The key difference, though, is that I think the ceiling for how much a whale is going to spend in our game is still going to be, far below what it's going to be in some of the more aggressive hardcore games. So, you know, knowing that, we just have to kind of build our monetization strategy around it.
It's interesting to see how the IDFA will affect the whales and, for example, the so-called hyper-casual ad whales and how that will affect the whole hyper-casual industry. And also that kind of very, very IAP-focused whale games such as forex strategy games or some of the casino games. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up because that's sort of the, what do they call it, the IDFA apocalypse that is upon us. I'm probably more of a more bearish when it comes to how this is going to shake out. Definitely pretty pessimistic here. I think that hyper-casual games will probably be the most negatively impacted here. For the most part, I think the user acquisition that they are doing themselves is probably not the maybe not the most sophisticated because the games are so simple anyway. So that's the one challenge they're going to face is getting new players that are going to help them monetize better. So first, you know, the you know what they say, like garbage in, garbage out, right? So you have players that aren't very good that you're acquiring as a hyper casual developer, and it's going to be much more difficult to monetize them. Then from there, it's going to be difficult for us to target those players. It's going to be difficult for the hardcore games to target those players. They'll probably, like the massive publishers, will probably survive on the basis of brand and other maybe more, I guess, three things. They'll have brand, they'll have more sophisticated tech, and then they'll just have a boatload of money that they can throw at this. You know, because when conversions go down, because your targeting isn't so great, the CPMs go up. And if you have an unlimited budget, if money's not a problem, then you can kind of accommodate that. For us in the middle, I think it will be a challenge, and we're looking at some solutions around that. And I think a big part of it is going to be there's a few things, right? So first of all, the whole way that we choose, like the pipes that choose which ads are going to show when, we'll probably have to adjust. So that's things like our waterfalls and bidding strategies on the monetization side. We're gonna have to be careful about. Beyond that, I think we're going to need to probably diversify the total inventory that we're showing. So right now, you know, I think maybe 90% of our, if not more, 90% of our revenue is coming from games advertising other games, right? If that is harder, if it's harder for app developers and game developers to do because they can't do as granular targeting, that might mean that we need to be looking at sources that are brands, that are maybe some e-commerce that can weather this storm. And so that's all stuff that we're actively like investigating or integrating. You know, we just integrated two brand partners to deliver ads in the case that app ad networks are unable to.
I could continue a little bit from the previous thing that you touched, which was ad placements. So you mentioned that kind of natural breaks, whether it's kind of the start of the session or then at the end of the session, they are really important. And one thing that I've noticed, which is quite peculiar, is that, for example, there are some match three games that prompt you to watch a video to get an extra life or get like few extra moves. And to me, that kind of seems a very, very odd situation to offer an ad, because most likely they immediately would like to go back to the game and finish whatever they have going on rather than clicking the ad. So I'm just wondering how much of an impact does the placement have? And then another note is that, because we at the Game Refinery have been working on contextual signals, like how much, if we can provide some data back to the ad networks about the context of the placement, and if that would have any effect on the performance. So let's say there is a specific placement that is only for players that are in guilds. So in that sense, you could say that these are kind of socializing players that you are targeting in this particular placement.
So it's interesting that you're working on that, actually, because there are definitely placements that we have that I think are more appealing to advertisers that we have not configured to be as maybe like for us, we don't really care as much about how they're labeled. Right. So, for instance, in the way that we set up our current the ad flow when players are entering the game, the very first thing they can do when they come back to the game is to double their revenue from when they weren't playing. And this is by far the best performing ad unit we have because players are confronted with it as soon as they get into the game. It has an enormous impact because they've probably not been playing for, 9 or 10 hours. So they're back in the game. They are motivated to play, and yeah, they want to increase their revenue, right? It's an idle game, so you're generating cash when you're not there. So they want to make the most out of that. Otherwise, it's almost a wasted 9 hours. Okay, so that's always the first. But for us, when we set up our waterfalls, like we don't really care so much about labeling those things because that's not a signal that's necessarily ever going to make its way back to the advertisers. If it is something that we could begin to optimize on, I think it would probably be extremely interesting to them. Likewise, with other ad placements in games that are really specific to hardcore players, like we have some of these placements, those might be really interesting. For instance, we have some placements that players will just like watch a bunch of times because they get a stacking bonus. Well, ad number one and the very last ad there are probably the most relevant. The ones in the middle, they're just cycling through, so those are less interesting. And we experiment a lot with the different placements. I think we found that there are some that just like that just won't really convert very well. And it usually comes down to what is the trade-off between how much value we're giving versus the time it takes to watch a 30-second ad. Things where, we offer like a little bit of soft currency or even a little bit of hard currency tend not to convert very well because players, are smart enough to know that that's not a lot of value and then they can get that other ways. It might be interesting if we can begin to have more of a conversation between ourselves and the advertisers about what those placements are and how we can work a little bit better together to make sure that they're being shown at the right place and right time.
Yeah, I did some research on some of the SSPs and ad networks and if they do provide some sort of framework. And I found only one of them that had like pre-named placements. But then again, you can use your own if you want. And the rest of them didn't do anything like that. So perhaps there's something that could be done there. And as I mentioned, like from contextual data point of view, I think it'll become increasingly important now with the IDFA changes are coming. So first of all, the advertisers, they need to redo their strategy, like from contextual signals point of view, which types of games they want to advertise in, whether it's to subgenre or art style or whatever other data points there are. And the same thing again goes to publishers. So you can limit or like allow only games that are or could be a good fit for you. But then at the same time, a kind of new contextual signal could be the placement and what could be the data that is passed on with that. And of course, then there's the ad networks and other players there who need to be able to use that data. But I think there's something that we'll see in the next few months now that the IDFA is coming about.
Yeah, and I think you guys are probably in a better position than us or even the ad networks in order to figure out how to standardize all of that. Because something like ads that are for business simulators that only show up on, or it's like first impression, like the ones I just described. If there's a way to standardize that so it's legible to marketers, I think it would be pretty impactful. Because right now they can target based on the app ID. So they have like kind of an idea of, oh, okay, here's a whole list of apps that are pretty good and some that are all right and some that are pretty terrible, and they can change their bids. And that's like really standardized. But I think coming up with a uniform language to communicate what those experiences are when they're happening is probably going to be huge. And I think that's something that we could probably borrow from, you know, maybe other advertising industries. Like I'd assume that like television or radio have figured out how to say like, oh yeah, this is like the prime ad spots that are like right before the cliffhanger. So you want to buy those. So there might already be like a path that's kind of at least vaguely laid out that we could adapt.
It's all kind of fascinating stuff, because I guess I just put a bit of context in for people who don't know that the IDFA, which has been mentioned a few times, is basically Apple is kind of changing the ways in which adverts and users can be tracked through kind of downloads and across different apps, which was announced last year and then caused a big controversy, and then Apple said we're going to kind of push it back, and so we're kind of expecting it really any moment now, and no one seems to be quite sure exactly what the impact's going to be. It kind of ranges across from a spectrum of some very blasé people who think everything's going to be fine to some apocalyptic people who think everything's going to be a disaster, which I guess maybe that's that's across anything in life. But I guess it is interesting that sort of change is coming, and it is definitely going to affect how monetization and user acquisition marketing kind of works in the short term. And obviously Apple devices are the kind of most lucrative, but people are expecting Android, Google to make similar changes at some point as well. So, but it's interesting that the discussion you've had is sort of, I guess, shows the way the industry is kind of moving towards building a new sort of kind of ad monetization kind of tracking system, which isn't necessarily looking at individual users, but is looking at how sort of types of gamers interact and the games they interact with and the way they interact with them, which is I guess more probabilistic, I suppose, in mathematical terms. But equally, you can imagine in a few years' time that would be the basis of which ad monetization is going to be operating on. I mean, do we think that ad monetization in the next few months, do you expect the kind of the revenue to be generated to be substantially hit, or is it sort of impossible to say, Nate?
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty substantially hit. So we've spoken to a number of colleagues across the industry, and it's a bunch of us have all done tests, and we've done tests where or we as a collective group of ad monetization folks have done tests looking at what the change in, basically first, what's the opt-in? How many people are, when presented with the option to share their data, actually share their data? And the number, the percent of whom who actually do is pretty low. So then we start building waterfalls for the majority, the ones who are not sharing their data. And the CPMs from those are the, I guess if you're unfamiliar with the term, basically how much money we make per ad drops precipitously when we do not give advertisers the option to do targeting. So it's I think, greater than 30% at least. So some of this, I think, is possibly because the entire industry has not yet shifted. So advertisers who in 90% of cases today are still getting all of the IDFA signals they need are not really paying that much attention to optimizing the other 10% of signals they're getting, or lack of signals. That might explain some of the decrease in revenue, but I think that overall it's going to be a pretty big hit to revenue, and it will probably last considerably long until people figure out how to work around it. But we don't really know like exactly what it's going to look like yet. And I think some folks are also trying like, you know, more sort of creative ways to try to get around some of the problems they're facing. I've heard a lot of chatter among folks about cross promotion solutions and things like this, so they can share IDFVs. So IDFV is the maybe the less useful cousin of the IDFA, that's specifically for vendors, but it can be used within an organization. So if I own 6 games in my App Store account, I can share IDFVs of all of those games, so that I can do better cross promo. So there's like some people who are looking at this kind of stuff to get around it, but that's not going to really impact the whole of ad monetizers.
So for obviously, you know, there's different sorts of mobile games use ads in different ways. So we have the kind of the hardcore who don't have any ads at all, so it doesn't really impact them. Or obviously, impacts them on the marketing, on the UA side of it, but it doesn't impact their kind of revenue. On the hyper casual side, that's where all their revenue comes from, so it might be quite significant for them. For you guys who kind of sit in the 50-50, does this mean that for the next kind of 6 months, next year, in terms of the games you're currently operating and how their economies work, there's a shift towards, right, we've got to make in-app purchases work better. So you kind of, you have that flexibility to kind of, to go, this isn't going to work so well, we're going to move on to this. I mean, obviously there's only so much you can do within the sort of idle genre, but I'm sure there's lots of cool things that you could do in that given that opportunity. So is that something you're actively looking to do?
Yeah. I mean, we're doing a few things there. So we've put a lot of resources into live ops. So we're spending a lot of time optimizing which in-app purchase promotions we show. We've actually done an increasing number of successful experiments on things like stuff like basically, how would I put this? It's like a no ads offers. So we've done a ton there, experimenting to see, you know, what can we offer to people so they don't have to show ads, because, or they don't have to see ads, because we still have ads. We'll probably still have ads even afterwards, but they might be, you know, if they're less and less interesting to users, then we want to give an alternative and things like that. No ads offers, so pay a one-off fee and then you get a permanent boost for whatever it was that you would have received had you used Rewarded Video. I think that stuff is probably going to make a huge comeback. We saw that maybe in the early days, like six, seven years ago, in a lot of games, but that's back when it was, when the experience that people were getting was interstitials and banners and it was annoying. And so now, and you know, you could just pay for a premium version that didn't have any of that stuff. Well, obviously now, with Rewarded Video, we have to change the formula a little bit. The challenge there is always going to be pricing, because it's hard to set just like a flat price based on what you want to sell this to a player for, because CPMs are changing. So, you know, what's the equivalent? What's the margin we want to make on this? But I think that's kind of where things are headed. And then we're spending a lot of time just focusing on, you know, optimizing the player experience and figuring out precisely which IAPs offers. Limited time offers will work. We have events in our game, so it makes it a bit easier. But I think that's also going to be a strategy for us with this IDFA change.
Yeah, Laurie, more generally across the kind of mobile game space, do you think we're going to see this is a shift where kind of designers and operators are going, right, let's really double down on our in-app purchases and let the kind of ad networks kind of sort out what's going to go on the ad side. Is this going to be like a bigger trend than just we're seeing that Nate's just described with Calibri and those sort of games?
I think like, as I mentioned before, so for example, very, very high IAP kind of monetization games will be in trouble as well, because they will have hard time finding the whales. So I would suppose kind of there would be an overall shift towards the more kind of hybrid monetization, where you monetize with both with the IAPs and maybe go broader with the types of IAPs. One good example here is, for example, Clash Royale. So they revamped their whole monetization pretty much when they introduced the season pass thing. So they now have lower price points, but most probably conversion is a little bit higher. They don't have ads yet, but kind of that sort of hybrid approach could be something that the games are or will be leaning towards.
And I guess it will be interesting just in terms of the kind of the sort of mix of games as well, that it could actually provide a kind of a, you know, a disruption that people who developers who have specialized in a certain type of game might go, well, this is the time to try a different sort of game that's going to allow us to kind of monetize in a different way. Maybe that's a bit more speculative as a trend on my part. I don't know.
Yeah, and like there are always flavor of the months. The Game of War used to be the biggest monetizing game. It's still a big one, but not even close to what it was in its in its glory days. And the same thing goes for kind of casual games that used to be big with ad monetization implementations that were popular back then. So the kind of industry is evolving overall. And there will be shifts in all types of directions. And who knows what will come after IDFA. So, interesting times.
Yes, good opportunity for students somewhere in their dorms thinking about starting a mobile games company. And we'll see how enormous they've grown their company in 4 years' time. that's the cycle, isn't it? Great. So that's been a really in-depth, good conversation. I've certainly learned a lot. Which is not saying a lot because there's lots of things I need to learn. But I'm sure that you listeners as well have learned a lot. Thank you very much to Laurie, and thanks very much to Nate for your time.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
And of course, thanks to you listeners for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. Every month we are releasing podcasts about what's going on in the world of mobile games. As you can kind of see, it really is kind of changing all the time. We kind of think it's becoming this massive kind of mature industry, but even within that there's these very strong disruptive trends that are happening. So I hope you find this stuff useful. Please subscribe. We are available through all the usual podcast channels. But thanks for listening, and come back next time.